It has been almost 2 years since Stanley Tukey Williams was executed after being denied clemency by California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. In the wake of his death, Stanley Tukey Williams' memoir, Blue Rage, Black Redemption, is being re-released this week in paperback to shed additional light on Tukey's personal and public fight for redemption. And looking at the bigger picture, though never fully acknowledged, over 25,000 young people have died in America's gang wars since 1980, a bit less than half the number of soldiers who lost their lives in Vietnam. In cities across America, young men primarily are being traumatized and then exist like traumatized war veterans with no way home. And today we'll deal with that war and the war in Iraq. First, I will talk with Tom Hayden and Barbara Bucknell about the legacy of Stan Tukey Williams. And then I'll talk with Tom about Iraq and how we can begin to move this nation to withdraw its troops. Tom Hayden was a founding member of the Students for a Democratic Society, author of its visionary call, the Port Huron Statement, described by Howard Zinn as one of those historic documents which represent an era. He was also one of the Chicago 8 protesters during the 1968 Democratic Convention. He served 18 years in the California legislature. He's the author of 10 books, including The Lost Gospel of the Earth, The Whole World Was Watching, Irish Hunger, Street Wars, Gangs, and the Future of Violence, and his latest, Ending the War in Iraq. Barbara Cotman Bicknell was a close friend of and an advocate for Stanley Williams. He was the editor of Williams' series of children's books, which spoke out against gang violence. She was co-producer of the Golden Globe-nominated film Redemption, the Stan Tukey Williams story, and she ran for the Democratic Party's nomination for governor of California in 2006. I don't believe we have Barbara with us yet, but we have Tom Hayden. Welcome once again, Tom Hayden.
Thanks, Terrence. Nice to be with you.
Okay. Let me ask you first a question. I like people to get a sense of the people behind some of the ideas in the work. It's 8 years since you left the California legislature, and those have not been 8 great years for America. How does it feel? What's the difference confronting our failures as a private citizen rather than someone that had some role within the government itself?
Well, it's a weird adjustment. You know, I was term limited out. I would have been about 59 years old. I was used to having 10 or 20 staff and being an opinionated fellow, I could do something about my opinions every day, several times a day. But at least, you know, I didn't leave office drooling or horizontal.
Right. They got you out where you were still some use to the rest of us.
I do have a lovable wife and a 7-year-old boy. I work pretty much alone, and I find myself detaching pretty much from that world of power struggles. Occasionally I get an impulse to throw myself back in, but my sense is that it's too late for that anyway, and I try to adjust on what I'm doing, which is reading, researching, writing, teaching, rank-and-file activism aimed at a relationship with the next generation and with my children's generation. And it's a learning experience, and it's the beginning of the quest for wisdom in old age, I suppose.
I forget, when exactly was it that your heart attack happened in terms of the in or out of the legislature?
I'm told it was heart failure.
Ah.
There's a difference because
right.
Your heart is less damaged. You can die from either, but I was rushed to a hospital and I survived. So it would have been at least 5 or 6 years ago.
After you were termed out.
I think it was partly a reaction to not paying attention to my diet for many years, but it was also I can't prove it, but a reaction to the departure from the legislature and then a very frustrating run for city council,
right,
which I lost by, I don't know, a tenth of a percent or
yep.
something.
Yep.
And then it came. So in the sequence of things, the lesson I felt was, that this had been, I was having a hard time adjusting to loss.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yet, when you talk about, I was piggybacking that on your saying, you know, that it's this, you know, this sort of elder's search for wisdom.
I don't know if I'll ever get to wisdom. I think I'm too much in the thick of things, and like a battler, a warrior.
Right.
But I do get more opportunities to read, go to primary sources, reflect, teach, and write. And it seems to me that's a proper thing that an old man should do.
Very good. We've been joined on the phone now by Barbara Bucknell. Barbara, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Barbara Bucknell, always good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
And Barbara, could you talk about how your collaboration with Stan Tukey Williams began?
Well, at the time, I was a journalist, and I had been asked by a national black women's magazine, Essence Magazine, to write an article about black youth gangs, and that sent me to San Quentin State Prison to interview Stan. And as I got there, he started talking to me about how what he wanted to do was write books for kids, anti-gang, anti-violence books, because he said he was not the same man who had walked into prison, that he had changed, and that he hated his legacy of having co-founded the Crips, and that he did not want that to be his sole legacy. He wanted to reverse that legacy, and would I help him?
And you did so. And you produced how many books, the children's books?
Oh, boy. We wrote, we co-authored 9 books for elementary and middle school kids. And then he has written his autobiography,
right.
The Blue Rage Black Redemption.
Which, as I said in the introduction, has just come out this week in paperback.
That's exactly right.
And you've added an epilogue. The foreword is by Tavis Smiley, and you've added an epilogue as well.
Let
me ask you a question, because I went online looking for the children's books, and the prices that were quoted were very high, which made me think that maybe they're out of print. What is their status?
Well, the middle school book, which is called Life in Prison, that is published by Chronicle Books, and that's been out now for almost 10 years, and it's still out. The elementary school books had been out for a total of 10 years. First printing was in 1996, and it just went out of print.
So if someone wants to get them, how do they get them these days, Barbara?
Well, they can go to the Tukey.com website, and that will direct them to Chronicle Books, and the elementary school books will be reprinted next year.
Great. So Tukey.com.
Tukey.com.
And that's
yes.
T-O-O-K-I-E.
That's correct.
The website to learn more about Tom's work and writings is TomHayden.com. Let me ask Barbara first and then Tom about, let me just give you two things. Stan Tukey Williams, or three things. Stan Tukey Williams, redemption, and capital punishment.
Absolutely was redemption. I knew Stan for the last 13 years of his life, and he absolutely was a redeemed and self-rehabilitated man. So so the next question is, if there is redemption, should there be clemency? Is that where you were going?
Yeah.
Well, and of course my answer to that is absolutely yes, but then frankly, you know, I am not a supporter of the death penalty, so I don't believe in killing someone as a punishment for killing somebody. I don't believe in that anyway. But I certainly do believe in redemption and change. I know Stan had changed, and I will say this in terms of society: he meant and was a very valuable for society, keeping him alive, and where he could continue to do the work. And the result is, I just checked the federal statistics on what has happened with young black men from between the ages of 17 and 24 in terms of the committing of murders. And what I've learned is that the murder rate has gone up in 2006 since he was executed. So it was not a deterrent to execute Stanley Tukey Williams, and he could have been still here with us to help us fight that kind of crime.
Yeah. Tom Hayden, your feelings and thoughts about Stan himself, about redemption, and about capital punishment in his case or in any?
I'm sitting here on a sunny day in my Culver City office, and I just noticed there on the wall of my bookshelf a photo with Stanley Williams and myself. It must have been just after my surgery, because I'm looking awful skinny. I think Barbara picked me up at the airport that day, and we drove out to Quentin. And the picture is in a little teeny cage where my interview with Tookie took place. I was in the process of researching a book called Street Gangs, on the history of street gangs in Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, and so on. And I wanted to know, about the perspective of an alleged founder of the Crips. And we spent a couple of hours, as I recall, and I came away with the obvious feeling, not that I had gone in with the skepticism, but the obvious feeling that Stanley Williams was far, far better for the whole world alive than dead. And rehabilitation can be considered a spiritual term or a legal term, but from a legal point of view, he was surely rehabilitated. There's no question about that. And the issue of clemency, I just want to make a narrow focus here, was not about letting the founder of the Crips out on the streets to rampage, blah, 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 which was the line of some. Clemency was about sparing him the death penalty so he would continue, his life behind bars, continuing to do the work he was doing. And there's no possible way to claim that that work didn't at least contribute to the saving of young lives. So my feelings today are still a kind of anger that I need to resolve, but I can't, towards Governor Schwarzenegger, who I've known in a personal capacity in the past, and who just rejected the clemency proposal out of hand, without any serious thought going into it, as you can tell from the document that he signed. The killing of Stanley Williams should haunt the governor until he himself passes on, because it's against his Catholic teachings, it's against the principles of his wife, it's against the principles of the Kennedy family. It was done entirely as a grotesque concession to the prison guards lobby and to the prosecutors, who wanted to finish the hunt for Stanley Williams, as if getting the founder of the Crips removed was putting a trophy on on their wall. And I'm not exaggerating this, because in this book, which is coming out, you'll see there's a little introduction that says a word of thanks by Tookie to various people that influenced him. Nelson Mandela is one, Martin Luther King is another, but in between is a tribute to George Jackson, who was a militant Panther revolutionary back in the time around 1970, when the prison guards were worried and had reason to be worried, because they were sitting on an extremely incendiary prison population who was fed up with oppression and mistreatment and abuse by the guards and so on. And there were incidents in which guards were killed, for which George Jackson was blamed. He, in turn, was executed in the prison yard in an alleged escape attempt. And I know the George Jackson family as well, having interviewed them. And What I know is from reading Arnold Schwarzenegger's statement about Tookie Williams, is that the principal point he made was that Tookie Williams could not possibly be rehabilitated if he cited the memory of George Jackson, because that would mean he's promoting the killing of prison guards and therefore should get no clemency. So there's been a long vendetta unknown to the public but known to inner city communities and the prison population for a long time, a vendetta against any people of color in prison who become radical or revolutionary or rise up. And somehow it wasn't about deterring further violence among young people on the streets. I think it was payback, pure and simple, vengeance on the part of Schwarzenegger to gain the support of the prison guards in his re-election campaign at a time when he was low in the polls.
Right. Okay, thank you very much. That's an in-depth understanding of this. Barbara, I'm going to let you go and continue the conversation with Tom about Iraq. Thank you very much, Barbara, and keep up your good work.
All right, thank you, and I'll see you tomorrow night, Tom.
Thanks, Barbara, very, very much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, time flies. We've got about 6 minutes here, Tom. If I can just read a statement that I read that you wrote very recently. I think the only alternative, I guess the only option, is to begin a global diplomatic peace offensive starting with a commitment to withdraw all our troops as rapidly as possible. The only way to engage the world, including the Iraqi factions, in doing something about containing the crises of refugees, reconciliation, and reconstruction. It means negotiating with Iran rather than escalating to a broader war. What can be done between now and Election Day in 2008 to actually not make this, as it's interesting, your discussion of Tukey Williams' execution was about electoral politics. What can be done to accelerate what so many in this country voted for in 06, what so many in this country know,
right,
and so many in Iraq know, and yet it's kind of on the back burner because of electoral politics?
Well, it's still on the burner, one parallel with what we were talking about is the fact that a majority of the people in Iraq are kids. That's a little-known fact. They're 15 years and younger, and they are totally traumatized. They have been raised in nothing but sanctions, starvation, polluted water, cycles of revenge, occupation, bombing, shootings, sectarianism. So you have this traumatized population that the United States still apparently thinks can be saved and converted to a pro-Western point of view. It's a very strong reflection of the Crusader mentality that justifies violence and punishment as the prelude to salvation. It's insane, and it's only going to get worse if Giuliani wins, because he is promoted and has hired for his promotion Norman Podhoretz and a number of other of the neoconservative hardliners who favored the invasion in 2003, have learned nothing.
That's right.
And are, in their own words, praying for the bombing of Iran. So let's keep our eyes on that being a minimum objective, to keep the neoconservatives from manipulating our fear and manipulating the process to come back to expand a war that never should have been begun in the first place. On the other side, how to accelerate the timetable if the Democrats should prevail. The problem with the Democrats is it's kind of murky. Public opinion doesn't actually favor an immediate withdrawal, but it overwhelmingly favors a kind of one-year or 18-month withdrawal with some corollary accommodations and efforts to contain the damage and prevent it from getting worse. So if you wanted to look at it optimistically, which I don't necessarily advise, you'll see that Bush will probably withdraw 20 or 25,000 this spring.
Basically taking out the extra troops added with the surge
yeah,
and getting back to where we were at that in November 06.
Yeah, if he doesn't launch a war against Iran.
Right.
And he'll do that pullout because the army's at a breaking point. Then if Hillary Clinton or whomever becomes president, some Democrat, They can be expected to withdraw a substantial number, but not even half the combat troops in the first year, which would be 25,000 to 75,000 combat troops. That would leave more combat troops on the ground, and possibly an increase in the number of embedded trainers and special ops forces who would be so-called trainers of the dysfunctional and sectarian Iraqi police, and they would have a green light to go after alleged al-Qaeda presence in Iraq. So if best case is the Democrats will begin to draw down the war. Worst way to view it is that they will not, in any of their platforms, Edwards, Obama, or Clinton at least, the others are better.
Richardson is outstanding, yeah.
Right. The others are better, but they're not in that top clump.
Exactly.
The best you can expect is the best, and this is not even guaranteed by any means, is that all the American troops will be packing for home sometime in 2012 or 2013.
Yeah.
In other words, out in 6 years.
Yeah, let me ask you very quickly,
Well,
Tom.
Then you've just got to figure out what can we do.
That's right. What can listeners do?
For public opinion to say no to this without bringing on Giuliani, but say no forcefully enough that a climate is created so that the next president, if they're a Democrat, has got to go much farther and much faster than that. That's what everybody should be thinking about through the long election year ahead, which includes budget fights, presidential primaries, party conventions, races for the Senate, races for the House.
What you're saying is in every place where that point can be made, make it and make it strongly. I've got to bring this to a close. Can I ask you for a 10-second, what can we do about Iran? Who should we be talking to? What should we be saying?
Well, we should stop being fixated on the quest to find out if we're going to bomb Iran. That shows our helplessness psychologically. We should be painting the picture of a war party that's failed once and now wants to fail twice so that we can talk sense to the media and to the fearful Democrats to stop it before it starts. And we should have a plan for demonstrations the moment such a eventuality begins.
Okay, thank you. That's Tom Hayden. His site is tomhayden.com. Email me at temcnally@mac.com. temcnally@mac.com. If you want to get on my weekly list, it'll tell you who's going to be on and what we're going to talk about, or if you want to comment or question or get CDs of old interviews.